ஓம் நமசிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் .org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் கர்மா மேனேஜ்மெண்ட், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நமசிவாய.
சோ திஸ் மார்னிங் we had a mixture of both our practices. We had our worship, our puja, and then afterwards our meditation. So in the terminology of dancing with Shiva, our worship is our theism, our meditation is our monism, and together creates monistic theism, right? So said another way, in theism, God is separate from us, greater than us, and we're seeking God's blessings. In monism, if we go far enough inside ourselves, we find God, and we're identical with God. So usually traditions are either monistic or theistic, but we're both. So we do two things. So while I was pondering that, I came up with another one. See if you can hear the difference. Difference between a monist and a monist. Can you hear the difference? So, are you a monist or a monist? So, just came to me this morning. So, you can't be both. No, you can't be both, definitely. So, of course, the monist is someone who believes he's identical with God, and a monist is someone who's always complaining. Right. So if you're always complaining, you definitely aren't thinking you're identical with God, right? Because God's not a complainer. God doesn't feel things are not the way they should be, you know. God is happy with everything the way it is, and everything is always the way it should be. So to be a monist, you have to stop being a monist. Anyway, that was not on the schedule, but it's always nice to start with something light. So if you wonder why I keep these at a distance, it's so I can read them. There's a certain range. If it gets too close, you can't see it. So it's perfect range here. So I found the brochure, the TM brochure. So we can look at that as a starter today. For any of you weren't here when we talked about it, this is a transcendental meditation program on sponsoring a homa, they call it a yajna, to fix your astrology, to appease Saturn. So the term they use is graha. If you're not familiar with the word graha, it means planet. So the word comes up a few times. Quite often it's used in the phrase the Navagrahas, the nine planets. And in many temples you'll see a shrine which has all nine planets. You see all nine planets in our Vanyan Mandapam, but we don't have them there to worship them. We have them there as a study, as a way of learning more about astrology. So we'll read this to start. How does the Maharishi Yajna program create an influence of peace? The word shanti, peace, describes the Maharishi Yajna program. The term graha shanti refers to specific yajnas to bring individual life in tune with the natural law and create a more peaceful relationship with the grahas, the planets, the universal laws of nature which deliver the results of your past actions to you. So that's close to what we're saying, but it's not exactly. But we won't get into the nuances of how it differs slightly. Graha Shanti Yajnas reduce negativity that is returning to you from the grahas. They undo the mistakes of the past. They maximize a graha's positive influence and improve your destiny. Fear and tension can be transformed into peaceful and productive tendencies. enemies can become friends. Every Maharishi Yajna performance operates from the all-powerful silent level of unity at the basis of all creation, which has an eternal state of peace and invincibility, which is an eternal state of peace and invincibility. Maharishi Yajna performances stir cosmic intelligence, the unified field of natural law, to create a specific effect, such as an influence of peace and happiness. The Yajna pundits recite Vedic sounds, those vibrations which structure the universe, to actually awaken specific qualities of natural law capable of materializing our desires. Almost done. How can personal Maharishi Yajna performances protect us from negativity and danger? The best protection is prevention, to avert the danger that has not yet come. It's important to be vigilant to make sure that the planetary influences coming to you are as positive and peaceful as possible, that they nourish and support your life. Planetary influences change with the cycles of time. The influence can be short or long, hidden or obvious, sudden or slowly developing. The planets continually affect you like a stream of water flowing through a pipeline. Maharishi Yajnas act like water filters to purify that influence. If the water is quite polluted, you need to change the filter more frequently. If you want an especially high quality of water, you must use a stronger filter. That's why Maharishi Vedic astrology experts recommend Maharishi Yajna performances at least once a year for every planet, giving a strong influence. For the average situation, this will remove the sharp edge of danger, so there is no lasting effect on your life. If great danger or strong negativity is predicted, more yajnas should be done, including special performances for specific problems. Those who desire an exceptional quality of life should repeat Maharishi Yajna performances quarterly or even monthly. However, even one Maharishi Yajna performance can begin to fulfill your desire for a secure and peaceful life. Okay. I said it's a good fundraising program. So what's wrong? What's wrong? So as we said, sponsoring of homas, you know, is wonderful. We certainly support the idea of sponsoring a yajna or a homa. But we support the idea for a different reason, because it's a way of worshiping God and the gods. And so we support it on that basis as a form of worship. So, but they're taking a different approach. So to understand the difference, we have an analogy. So they're talking about solving problems. So we'll use the analogy of a health problem. So let's say we have chest pains. You know, we're in our 50s and we have chest pains. And so we go to a doctor. In fact, we go to two doctors because we're going to see a comparison. So one doctor says, chest pains, no problem. I've got a perfect remedy. It's this pill. All you have to do is take this pill 3 times a day. It's an old Ayurvedic remedy, and your chest pains will go away. Sounds good, right? Go to another doctor, and he says, you have chest pains. You know why? You don't exercise. Your diet's a mess. You know, you're overweight. You have to change how you live. You have to change your actions. You have to change your lifestyle. Cut out all fatty foods, exercise 30 minutes a day, and lose 20 pounds. Hard work. So two approaches. One, just take a pill. Your chest pains will go away. The other is you have to change your actions. You have to change the way you're living, what you're doing, because it's actually what you're doing is creating the problem, right? So that's the approach we're taking. We're studying out what we're doing, what we've done in the past, what we're doing in the present, and considering what we're doing in the future, looking at our actions in a precise way, understanding cause and effect, how what we do in the present creates what we experience in the future, how what we've done in the past creates how what we experience in the present. So we're looking at it like the second kind of doctor. So this is like the first kind of doctor. Just take a pill, no problem. Just do a sponsorship. Just send us some money and everything will be okay. You don't even have to attend. You know, just send us the money, we'll do everything. Monthly is best. So, anyway, You can see, and this doesn't even talk about karma. It doesn't educate you in the principles of, well, these influences are coming, but why are they coming? It doesn't really let you look at that and say, well, they're coming because of what you've done in the past. You've acted unwisely in the past, otherwise you wouldn't be experiencing something negative in the present. It doesn't look at that, but it should. So we want to follow the second way and change your diet, exercise half an hour, and lose 20 pounds, which is harder to do. So, moving along, we're looking at two new concepts today, additional concepts. So the first one is astrology indicates the patterns of karma. So that goes quite along with this. So I'll read it since it's a little technical. Prarabdha karma, remember that's the karma that's going to manifest in this life. So prarabdha karma means of the karma you carry with you, a certain portion of it is going to manifest in this life unless you do something unusual. You can manifest more if you want to, but we'll get into that later. You can't manifest less. But this amount is scheduled to manifest in this life. It's called prarabdha karma. Some will manifest the beginning, some in the middle, some in the end. But everything that's scheduled to manifest is called prarabdha karma. So the sum total of that determines one's time of birth. So this is important. The prarabdha karma determines the time of birth, which makes sense, right? Okay. The time of birth determines one's astrology. Astrology, meaning the different Mahadasas and the Bhuktidasas, those of you who are astrologers can explain it to those who want to know afterwards. The astrological periods determine the release of the karmas. So it's an interesting cycle. Thus, an individual will experience certain astrological periods as difficult and other periods as auspicious and positive. So, understanding this principle is very useful because it helps us understand the relationship between astrology and karma. So it's a very important relationship. And therefore, when we have that basic understanding that there is a relationship between our astrology and our karma, when we approach astrology with that understanding, we can gain an understanding about how our karma will be manifesting, say, during the next 12 years. We say, this is going to be a period where everything is successful, or this is going to be a period where everything is difficult. We're going to have some major setbacks. No astrologer can tell you that. So that's helpful to know. Why? Because if you're having setbacks, you can remember that it's in your astrology. Otherwise, you tend to think of it, gee, you know, everything's failing. I'm a terrible person, or I'm limited, or I'm doing something wrong. You also think it might go on forever. But you say, oh, I only have 10 more years left. I'm hanging in there. Only 5 more years left. I got through it. Let's have a celebration. You know, it helps put it in perspective. So it's very helpful in that way. Also, in your positive periods, it's good to take chances, business chances, so forth, you know, because you're more likely to succeed. If you're going through a negative time, you don't want to take chances. You want to be more conservative in terms of a business venture and investment and so forth. So, but what the problem is, the stereotype is, difficult times are bad, good times are good, positive times are good. We're not supposed to have difficult times, right? It's a stereotype. Everything's supposed to be good. If things are difficult, it's better if things are going good than if things are going poorly, right? That's the stereotype idea. But we're not looking at it correctly. That's just an ordinary human way of responding. There's no wisdom in that. We're not looking at it through karma. A better way of looking at it is, if something negative happens, if we go through difficult times and we get through them, we say, oh, how wonderful, I got rid of that difficult karma. We got rid of the karma. It's like Swami Sivananda's story. You know, someone attacked him, and he thanked the person for attacking him. Why? Because he was rid of that karma. Maybe that was his last karma. So if negative things happen, we shouldn't complain. Shouldn't blame God. And we shouldn't feel that it's not a positive event in our lives. We're getting rid of a karma. So we're getting rid of a karma. So that's important to remember. Next principle, karmas are either active or inactive. Again, I'll read it. It's a little technical. Sanchita, prarabdha, and kriyamana karmas. And we're going to have a test on those, so you have to learn how to spell them. Can be divided into two categories. Arabdha, begun, undertaken, karma that is sprouting, and anarabdha, not commenced, dormant, or seed karma. So the idea is, just like we were talking about before, it's like seeds. You know, if you want something to sprout right away, you can choose an alfalfa seed, right? Alfalfa sprouts are very popular. Why? Because they sprout quickly, right? You put them in water and they sprout. You want to grow a coconut tree? It takes longer, right? It takes maybe a year to get something to sprout out of a coconut. It took a week to sprout an alfalfa. So just because something is a seed doesn't mean all of them are going to sprout at the same time. So, and some of them aren't sprouting at all. They're sitting there for a long time. So if you store a seed in a dry place or a moist place, it determines how fast it sprouts, right? And so forth. So some karmas are already sprouting, some are about to sprout, and some won't sprout in this lifetime. So those are our two new concepts. Turning now to our principles, our review. First, we have four principles so far. We'll review them very quickly. Most everyone has heard them all. So our first principle, of course, is forego retaliation, and that's required because if we retaliate, we're creating new karma. And there's no possible way we're going to do anything more subtle than just create new karma. Accept responsibility is the idea that whatever happens to me, I created it. Usually we only want to accept the fact if something good happens, I'm responsible for that. If something bad happens, we want to blame someone else. But of course, accept responsibility means whatever happens, good or bad, I created. Whatever happens, if we have children, whatever happens to our children, they created it. You don't have to blame yourself if something happens to your child. The child attracted it because of the karma of the child. So a person is responsible for everything that happens to them. Third principle is forgive the offender, even if we manage to not retaliate and accept responsibility, we can still harbor resentment toward the person that did it. We know it's our responsibility, but they shouldn't have done it anyway. Oh, we're kind of hedging, you know. We've got it right, but not quite right. So to get it fully right, we have to forgive the person who did the action to us. Just fully say, this is me doing it to me through another person. I did this to myself through another person. If we look at it that way, we don't really see the other person. They're transparent. We see ourselves doing it to ourselves over a period of time. We do something two lifetimes ago. In this life, it comes back, the reaction to what we did. So we did it to ourselves through another person. So those three go together as a team of principles. Forgo retaliation, accept responsibility, and forgive the offender has to do with actions that are happening to us. Things are happening to us from others. We're responding a certain way to them. So that's a set. Consider the consequences focuses on actions we are doing in the present or considering doing in the present. So it's a second situation. So the first principle in review is we consider the consequences. It's the idea of think before you speak. applied to karma. We consider the karmic consequences of what we're about to do before we do it. Karmic equivalent of think before we speak. So that's what we've covered so far. So we're ready for the fifth principle, which also relates to actions we're considering doing or doing in the present. It's called create no negative karmas. So it's the ideal that we're wise enough in our actions, controlled enough in our actions to create no new negative karmas. And it's something we can do. How do we do it? Well, we understand the law of karma first, in the sense of what is the consequence. That's the previous principle. We understand the karmic consequences of different actions. So how do we understand the karmic consequences? Well, we can read Gurudeva's teachings. We can read scriptures like the Chitukara. We can talk to wise people. We can gain an understanding of what are the karmic consequences of different kinds of actions, if we're unclear. Then we can commit ourselves to acting in that way. What's the point of creating new karma, negative karma? What is the point of adding to the karma? It's just creating more lives, right? There's no reason to create new negative karma. All it does is postpone the end of the journey. Every time we create a negative karma, we're moving the end of the journey forward. So what's the point of that? Do we want to get there at least on time? Maybe we want to get there sooner. We can talk about that. How to get there sooner? How to move the end closer? There's no reason to move the end farther away, right? So the idea is we need to take a pledge, at least unto ourselves. We could create a form. I promise henceforth to refrain from all actions that create negative karmas. It's a promise. We need to promise ourselves, you know, commit ourselves to putting this into action. So Gurudeva has a nice summary of this. Wise handling of karma begins with the decision to carry the karma we now have cheerfully. That's not being a monist. And not add to it. So I'll read that again since I made a joke in the middle. Distracted everyone. But this is how it tied in to the lesson of the day, not being a monist. Wise handling of karma begins with the decision to carry the karma we now have cheerfully and not add to it. So that is the essence of this idea. Carry the karma we now have cheerfully. Be cheerful. You know, we're working through our karma. Why not be cheerful? Sometimes it's pleasant, sometimes it's not, but we can still be cheerful. We're going through it, and we don't want to add to it. There's no reason to create new negative karmas to face in the future, which is the shortcoming of this approach. It doesn't focus us at all on not creating more karma. It's kind of saying, no problem, create more karma, do more yajnas. It's... So, this is important, right? So, when it comes to actions in the present, new actions, you want to consider the consequences and then act in a way which creates no new negative karma. So, those are the two principles relating to that idea. Moving on, sixth principle, divinely influenced karma. So, this is our theism. Theism means it's okay to ask for help. Lord Ganesha, please help me. No, that's theism. We don't have to do it all on our own. This isn't totally leaning on your own spine. You're supposed to lean on your own spine, but it's also okay to ask for help. Karma management does not have to be done totally on our own. Help is available. Divine help, in fact. Such help comes from none other than, anybody remember? Lord Ganesha, right. Who has the duty of helping sincere devotees manage their karma in the best way possible. Once Through sincere worship, an individual develops a personal relationship with Ganesha. What in the world is a personal relationship with Lord Ganesha? Well, what's a personal relationship with a person? It's when you know someone well, right? There's lots of people we know, but we don't know them well. We don't consider them friends, so we don't really have a personal relationship. People we work with, distant relatives, these are people we know, employees, but we don't know them well. We don't consider ourselves to be really good friends. So good friends know each other well, feel close. So how in the world do you get close to someone you can't see? So that in itself is a vast subject, which we can't touch on this morning. But personal relationship means you feel close. You feel like Ganesha is a friend, someone you can talk to, someone you naturally share your problems with, and so forth. So how to get to that state is in the Lord Ganesha book, Loving Ganesha. It probably develops it the best of Gurudeva's teachings. So what happens when you do that? Well, an amazing thing happens. You end up in your Swadharma. Swadharma. Swa means one's own. One's own dharma. So it means the best way of working out your karma and moving forward. It's one's own dharma. So it includes things like, do I get married? Do I become a monk? You know, for someone who's a monk to get married, or for someone who's naturally married to become a monk, they're missing their Swadharma. They're not taking their next natural step forward. It's like for most people to go and sit in a cave and meditate 10 hours a day, it's a waste of time. Absolute waste of time. It's not their Swadharma. It's not their next natural step on the path. It's like trying to move from the 6th grade instead of into the 7th to the 12th grade. You know, most people, unless you're a genius, and there are some who can do that, but most people can't make that big a step from the 6th grade to the 12th grade. It's too big a step in maturity. But likewise, to keep going through the 6th grade life after, you know, year after year after year, that doesn't make any sense either, right? So to move along from one life to the next in a series of natural steps forward is the idea of Swadharma. You don't want to take too big a step, or take no step, or step backwards. You want to move forward naturally. So it includes your profession, includes your religious commitments, the sadhanas you're trying to do. Like I was saying, for most people, sitting in the cave 10 hours a day will not cause them to make spiritual progress. They could even go backwards. Get discouraged, get depressed. They're alone all the time. You know, it's not natural. So we want to move forward in a natural way. So how do we do that? Well, it's hard to know. It's hard for the intellect to figure it out because there's so many influences on us, parents, friends, television, whatever. It's hard to figure it out. So therefore, the worship of Lord Ganesha helps us do that. So there are clues. Quite often, someone is born into a family who has a similar Swadharma to the family. So therefore, it's natural to follow the professions of the parents as a clue. It's not always the case, but quite often that's the case, particularly if the husband and wife are close in Swadharma. Then the children tend to be of that Swadharma. So like doctor family might naturally have a son who wants to be a doctor. It's not just because of the parents' profession, it's because it's the Swadharma. A priest family would have a son who wants to be a priest. So in a stable, not really stable, in certain situations, which are less common these days, you get individuals reincarnating into the same group. It's a group reincarnating into itself, like a big family, a subcaste, a priesthood. Like Chidambaram has a priesthood called the Dikshitars. It's a hereditary priesthood of a few hundred families. I forget the exact number. So a situation like that, you reincarnate into yourself. You reincarnate back as a Dikshitar. Keep doing that. So it's one of the logics about arranged marriages is you can get a group that's reincarnating into itself and therefore refining itself, constantly refining itself. But that's another topic. So, Swadharma, our natural occupation and duties to family, friends, relatives, deceased relatives, community, guru, and temple. So, one story on that. There was a doctor from Canada, single doctor in his 30s, just getting started in his practice in Canada, and having second thoughts. It wasn't exactly what he envisioned, the reality of the medical practice he was in. And he faces the same problem gurus do. You give advice and no one follows it. Yeah. Go to the doctor, you get his advice, follow it for a week or two. It's too hard. You know, you got to change your diet, exercise. 2 months later, you go to another doctor. It's easier to go to another doctor and hope for easier advice, right? So it's easier to go to another guru and hope for different advice because this is hard to do. So anyway, he was kind of wondering about his Swadharma, a little late. You know, he'd been to medical school and so forth. But he was still wondering, so handed him the Loving Ganesha book, and I said, you know, worship Ganesha. And if you worship Ganesha in a sincere way, it'll become clear to you what you can do with your life. Your Swadharma will clarify itself. Ganesha will stimulate your own intelligence regarding this matter. So, well, how does Ganesha, in addition to helping us establish ourselves in our Swadharma, which enables us to move forward spiritually in the easiest way, also guides our karma. So analogy for that is like we have a two-year-old. So the mother is guiding the two-year-old all the time, and the mother is the Lord of Obstacles. In this case, the mother is Ganesha. So when we think of the Lord of Obstacles, if we don't think about a two-year-old, if we think about ourselves, we always think, well, Ganesha, if I pray to Ganesha, he'll remove the obstacles, right? But if you're the mother of a two-year-old, you don't want to remove the obstacles. You know, you've got obstacles here and there, everywhere, to keep the child from hurting itself, right? Obstacles all over the place. So you've created obstacles to keep the child from hurting itself. The electric plug as a cover, right? So the child can't stick the finger in. The matches are on the top shelf, not down there, and so forth. You've created all kinds of obstacles. Why? To prevent certain actions from happening in the first place. So Ganesha, in that sense, when we're close to him, controls what happens to us, just like a mother controls what happens to a two-year-old through placing and removing obstacles. Directs the whole experience, doesn't change the karma, but makes it work out more smoothly, avoids certain negative parts of it. The karma will still manifest itself, but in a smoother way, in a more enjoyable way. It's easier to be cheerful and go through it. Gurudeva comments on Swadharma. Such a life is the fulfillment of all previous efforts and thus erases the uncomplimentary deeds and adds beneficial ones, so a next birth can be most rewardingly great and useful to the whole of mankind. So is the fulfillment of all previous efforts, meaning secular and religious, external accomplishments in the world and internal accomplishments in the intellect, internal accomplishments in spiritual development. It's the fulfillment of that. We're moving forward in all those areas. That's Swadharma.